Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here with you this afternoon in what is going to be the final presentation for the first day. In the next 35 or 40 minutes, my goal is to present some general topics in the concept of information system architectures that are meant to be mostly thought-provoking and not at all dogmatic. Obviously, we're seeing a tremendous explosion in both the richness or complexity of data as well as in the need to integrate data effectively into the overall patient electronic health record. And the process of integrating this data provides some challenges and complexities which are by no means completely solved at this point. One specific area of interest is the laboratory information system, and specifically the interface of the LIS with various points outward, specifically the hospital information system, and then looking more outward to the level of regional healthcare enterprise solutions, the need and hope for providing consistent and seamless approaches to sharing of critical patient information for effective and improved healthcare. So the reality is our present state is we've made the first pass attempt to effectively use electronic systems and storage media and distribution media for exchange of electronic healthcare data, but in many respects, it's a flat first pass or first generation, second generation model. And with the advent of more sophisticated database technologies and architectures, it's salient to revisit our first principle approaches and consider alternate approaches in addition to HL7. So I mentioned HL7 in the title in terms of getting past HL7. That was meant to be thought-provoking. The reality is you'll see as HL7 or new incarnations of it are, in fact, probably part of the solution, but not in the fashion in which we use HL7 today. Specifically, what I'd like to cover in the next few minutes is the notion of the federated topology. Perhaps by a show of hands, how many of you are familiar with the architecture of a federated database? Very good. And how many of you actually are using federation or federated databases in your clinical delivery of information? So there's some hands here. So that's actually very encouraging and clearly highlights the fact that this is really an inflection point for recognition of federation as one possible solution. An additional set of topics I'll cover, since federation is a wonderful segue into that, is the notion that as we are embarking on trying to reap additional economies of scale in our laboratory setting, in the reality of diminished numbers of healthcare professionals, laboratorians specifically, Lean Six Sigma holds the promise to improve our efficiencies. And the same seven principles of Lean can be turned introspectively not just to workflow in a tangible sense for operating at the bench, but actually can be applied in a more abstract sense to the rational deployment of effective laboratory information system, hospital information system interfaces, and I will review that topology. Finally, it's salient to review the underlying model technologies and standards tools which will enable and make possible the federated architectures that I'll cover. So what are the current trends in terms of strategic hospital planning for IT? And this, in fact, then has implications within the LIS continuum. We have at larger centers actually the realization that central repositories, although very attractive from a data mining and clinical research perspective, have significant overhead in terms of supporting the complexities and dependencies of the multiple ancillary departments that feed into the central repository. And so, of course, pathology and the laboratory information system are one such ancillary of many, which, of course, includes radiology, possibly the emergency department, the OR, admission, discharge planning, and so forth. And with the realization that the ancillary departments have unique and specific needs that potentially are different than the central repertoire of capabilities provided by the HIS, there's advantage and a compelling argument to look at ways of empowering the individual ancillaries to not only control content, that is to say, we're reporting a sodium, we're reporting the text of a surgical pathology result, you know, a biopsy, malignancy, but the display of that content. And one example I'll mention in a little bit for example, a real-world example of MD Anderson Cancer Center has implemented this. So this is not an ethereal example. There's a real-world construct that shows that this technology can be deployed successfully. And then finally, in strategic planning recently, a number of white papers, there's been the realization that monolithic repositories, vis-a-vis the central CDR, central data repository, are in fact ideal for research, but not necessarily for clinical support in the setting of maintenance of such complex systems. So my talk, although specific to the laboratory information system, ties into the difficulties that already have been encountered with HIS architecture. If we look, for example, now in the setting of a typical laboratory with typical bidirectional instruments, where each one of these circles, for example, perhaps represents an automation line or a bidirectional capable instrument, we see the notion of having a sender and an HL7 receiver, which then, in fact, have to be aggregated first to the repository within the lab, which is the LIS, and then through what is typically an additional set of one or more HL7 interfaces to the institution at large. Thus, each instantiation of these HL7 interfaces may or may not be the same. And in many instances, each one of these represents separate and distinct initial effort to implement and then ongoing effort to maintain. And there are external and internal dependencies intrinsic to this maintenance. The external dependencies are the fact that these devices are not static in time. There are vendor upgrades of firmware. Sometimes there are model changes that the vendor would say, it's exactly equivalent. But you all know the reality that when you get an exactly equivalent device in your lab and you plug it in, if you don't test, Murphy's Law will come into play and it won't work. So equivalency is only proven empirically for HL7 interfaces. I think this is a conservative and appropriate strategy to take. One possible future state would be a perfect world where there were one type of HL7 interface for instruments that was always the same and always worked, just like if you go, for example, to an electronics store and buy a telephone and plug it in one of the telephone jacks in your house, you really don't worry, at least I don't, if your telephone's going to work. And 9 out of 10 times, or maybe 99 out of 100 times, your phone's going to work. And this plug-and-play mentality that Bruce, in fact, has mentioned in the past over a number of years is very elegant and very compelling, but at the same time, very difficult to attain in the real world. So federation, as you'll see shortly, is one first small step towards the notion of a plug-and-play continuum that involves both the laboratory instrumentation layer as well as downstream layers to the hospital proper and then to regional possible interests. And a key aspect of a optimal model, as we'll see in federation, is the notion of just-in-time aggregation. You have just-in-time data from your instruments, and as your LIS assembles things for downstream distribution, it's just-in-time, which means you have a single source of truth, as we'll see, and that single data element represents the current best knowledge of what that value is. And so you don't have the notion of data reduplication as is present in current topologies. Shifting attention to a resource perspective at the interface between the LIS and the HIS, in a perfect world, we have, of course, our zone of expertise and influence and working in perfect partnership between the pathology lab and hospital IT at large, there would be an understanding of where our domain ends and where the hospital's domain begins. The reality, of course, is that with ever-increasing demands placed upon central hospital IT, the amount of resources potentially available to any ancillary department, including pathology, are diminishing. And so continuing this abstract notion, there is a gap created in terms of necessary expertise to accomplish interfaces having a shortfall. And the question is, how do we address this? Well, one possibility, of course, is exceeding our zone of influence and starting to take over roles which traditionally would be that in the aegis of central hospital information system IT personnel. Of course, this has potential, it's fraught with potential problems of political discourse, overstepping one's appropriate bounds of responsibility, and just general dissent within the IT continuum. However, the reality is to make this information handoff, somebody has to write test, initially deploy, and then maintain the interfaces, again, typically HL7 interfaces, between instrumentation, laboratory information system, and finally HIS. And how does that happen? So if we look at present state, we have significant expended effort on instrument interfaces, and then finally the LIS to HIS effort, representing an increasing percentage of overall operational support. To use University of Michigan as an example, we are in the process of, as an institution, of deploying electronic order entry, which is a wonderful thing, but because that ties into our information system bidirectionally, we have imposed upon our division, our pathology IT division, external dependencies, which equates to significant allocation of our local programming and programmers' resources for issues and projects outside of the pathology department in order to support the hospital at large. Each one of these projects, in typical fashion, is very likely some type of HL7 interface project. And they're all different, they're all unique, and they vary significantly in expenditure between maybe a few minutes to hundreds of hours. And these external dependencies are not going away as institutions are more and more turning to integration of electronic order entry and unification of the multiple silos, which typically manifests the current modern fragmented hospital information system. So as a result of this, external dependencies can impose a really daunting technology requirement on departments that may be already IT strapped, pathology departments, that is. And then anything then that could be done to facilitate accelerated or simplified testing, deployment, validation, or maintenance of such interfaces would be a tremendous boon for the overall IT system. Obviously, the current language of these interfaces is typically HL7, 2.2, 3, 4, some series of HL7. And this is, of course, the formalized exchange construct used to precisely identify the patient, the result, and any ancillary data that is associated with that result. And again, as I've mentioned, this is the maintenance of this on an ongoing basis is labor-intensive. What would the future state look like? Obviously, we'd want to use standards, as Bruce and a number of the other speakers have highlighted, especially Mike Besich, that standards will be paramount as we move forward for creating simplified interoperability, reducing complexity, and removing interdependencies, which are only sometimes detected after a complex system is deployed, thus creating the need for revisional correction, which is, in a sense, rework, which is very, very wasteful. The technologies that would potentially facilitate this would be, interestingly, HL7. So HL7 doesn't necessarily go away. Version 3.x is elegant in that it has the model of data built into it, but versions 2 of HL7 can be manifest with XML, as we'll see shortly, providing standalone solutions that can provide the promise of interoperability without having the need to constantly maintain individual, unique, and disparate HL7 implementations. Things that will support this are XML, as we'll see, and then framework systems of knowledge, or so-called ontologies, that appropriately demonstrate inheritance, or, for example, if you use anatomy as an example, we know the arm is attached to the torso or body, the hand is attached to the arm. Within the realm of laboratory reporting, we have various classes of data. We have patient identifiers. We have laboratory analyte identifiers, reference range identifiers, and these can be placed into a data model, thus facilitating appropriate identification of a number, of what the number represents, as opposed to just saying, okay, I see the number 2.4. What is that? And as we'll see in the example of HL7, the conventional form of HL7, there is some ambiguity, which causes, of course, a significant need for programming to identify and resolve the sender and the receiver at the HL7 interface level. And then finally, adoption of Lean Six Sigma philosophies can increase overall efficiency, and there's a significant attractiveness to having Lean Six Sigma in place within the future use of interfaces. So if we look at the typical estimates of effort, I'm using the University of Michigan as a typical larger center, not necessarily just academic, could be community hospital-based as well. 10-plus instrument interfaces, and this is conservative, two HIS interfaces, 40 programmer hours per interface per year as a conservative support metric. So again, this is a very conservative number. Just in HL7 maintenance alone, 800-plus hours of effort per site year. If you multiply this by all the larger and even smaller or intermediate-sized community-based laboratories just in the U.S. alone, this easily attains millions of programmer hours for maintaining the HL7 armamentarium, which currently supports delivery of all the information which our laboratories produce. This is a daunting number. So imagine what you could do with that millions of programming hours if you weren't using it to simply maintain something which theoretically could be standardized and plug and play out of a box. Again, meant to be thought-provoking, this isn't going to happen overnight, but this is where we should be thinking for the future. So we have an imbalance. If we have, and this again is conservative, the notion that hospital IT support for our lab operations will be fixed over the next 5-10 years, which perhaps it'll be slightly a downward trend, and we know for a fact, because of the evolution of our reporting, molecular data and so forth, that our complexity of reporting needs is going to go up at some point in time, and 2009 is really just arbitrary, but at some point in time, we're going to have a crossover where the available resources, again, thinking of those spheres of influence between what we need and what central IT can provide to us, will create a gap. And the hope is that federated models can be one part of the solution that either mitigates the effect of this gap or makes it completely go away. And obviously, complexity in reporting and also the demands of the end user for more sophisticated reports. For example, if you think about hematology, the desire to incorporate bitmaps, other types of graphical data, as well as just textual data, that easily can overrun conventional text-based HL7 interfaces. How will we address that? So we really hit the realm of a postmodern view of data warehousing. And so with the notion of complexity, we have right now our current world state dependence on monolithic repositories. All the ancillary departments in the hospital feed into the monolithic CDR, central data repository, which then in turn is coupled to some type of one or more viewers for allowing clinicians to access the data and make clinical decisions. As the complexity of the data grows, there will be an increased problem with displaying that data and using it for clinical use. In the research setting, of course, having a monolithic repository is very, very attractive. However, in the operational support of conventional clinical reporting needs, as I will show in a couple minutes, the notion of a monolithic repository is perhaps not so attractive. And this ties in specifically to the notion of how the LIS ties into the HIS. It's the rework associated with recapitulating things that really belong, for example, in the lab domain to the external HIS continuum. Let me give one concrete example and I'll move on. Let's say we have a particular workflow both in theory and then electronically for providing an amended surgical pathology report or an amended chemistry value. We have to go through that process, validate that the information is correctly updated to the appropriate patient from the instrument all the way to the schema, then finally to the table stored in the database. The next step, of course, is validating that that new workflow, in fact, will update the clinical data repository in exactly the same fashion. So what you have is a cascaded dependency of validation steps, not just internal to your own domain, but really every step leading to the final display of the information whenever any change in workflow or database architecture is encountered. And this can be considered analogous to rework. So if we look at the application of Lean and Six Sigma principles, there are seven of them, as applied to LIS deployment, we can find some interesting parallels to the realm of any production environment, whether it be the automation line in an automobile assembly plant or in the clinical lab. And these are potentially opportunities for significant benefits in terms of greater efficiency. So overproduction, what is the analogy of overproduction in the lab? Carrying out more computational effort than is required. The notion of conveyance, imposing more interface transfer steps than would be theoretically required. Waiting, delays in reporting associated with the multiple cascaded steps, the multiple handoffs of data. The notion of motion, the added complexity of multiple interfaces. It's sort of like the telephone game. One interface tells the next interface, the next interface tells the next interface. That multiplies the number of chances that data could be corrupted along each successive path. And finally, a key element that is a tremendous opportunity, rework. This is being forced to respecify and retest downstream interfaces when local processes are modified. That's the external downstream dependency. Is there a possible topology that could remove the need for this rework? And as we'll see, the federated architecture is, in fact, one such possibility. Over-processing, the extra effort associated in the denormalized data models. That is to say, in a denormalized data model, a particular data element, instead of living in one and exactly one place, lives in multiple places. The extra work now is associated with the code that you have to support to make sure that the copy at all times looks like the original. If you have multiple copies, you have that much more work in terms of additional programmatic code to constantly being looking back at the referential source table or source schema to make sure that they're in sync. And this is actually one of the largest problems of complex enterprises, is the synchronization of particular tables across departments, across different applications. And this is both a combination of rework as well as over-processing. And then similarly tying into that is the notion of inventory. And in the IT continuum, the opportunity for reduction of waste in inventory is removing the duplicated data storage, which then reduces the storage infrastructure requirements because you're keeping your referential or primary data in one and exactly one place. So this is the Japanese symbol for waste, or muda, and there's opportunity in all seven areas of lean to reduce waste by rational design of information systems. So the opposite of waste in this case is renpu, or federation. And the promise of federation is recognizing that central IT departments have increasing demands upon them and therefore diminishing composite resources to each ancillary department to meet those ancillary department needs. And similarly, ancillary departments are the most knowledgeable in most cases about the data that they provide. So if it takes less effort and parts less risk to store data element in one and no more than one place, you're reducing work and potentially reducing interfaces. And the diagrams we'll see in the next couple of slides will show how the federated architecture differs or departs from our current cascaded approach of shuttling off packets of data. So we're looking finally then at the opportunity to reduce time-consuming rework associated with these cascaded changes. So federation, at its very simplest core, is looking at a way of transitioning the conventional data model, which has ancillaries feeding through their multiple conventional HL7 interfaces to a central repository, and then the user querying the central repository for data. That means the source of truth, as far as the user, is a central repository, and each one of these interfaces has to be maintained independently, but recognizing there's a problem here. The real source of truth for the lab is really the lab. This becomes the second source of truth. So the rework here is having to create an interface. You already have the interfaces between the instruments and the lab. Now you have this interface, so that if there's an update in the information, you have to validate now that this interface is doing what happened internally. This is rework. And so this is then multiplied out across the entire institution at large and represents tremendous, potentially unnecessary effort. In a federated architecture, we still have a central waypoint. It is no longer, however, a repository. This is an aggregation step. So the user, through web technology, or in this example, through SQL or ODBC type queries made possible through the web-based client, sends a query along what can be considered a data architecture bus. This is also known as a federated query. The query goes out to all the ancillary systems concurrently in real time. These systems then identify, on a patient-centric model, the appropriate information that is being queried and returns that information. However, recognize that the single source of truth now is to the stewards who are best empowered to recognize each data source. The single source of truth comes back, is aggregated in real time, provided to a web view or some other type of display construct to the user. Once that display process is completed, this data evaporates, recognizing this is a transient extraction of data based on the current best understanding. Let's say, for example, in the lab you have an amended sodium level. A minute later, when you run this query, the federated model will effectively identify the fact that the single source of truth is providing, in fact, the updated model. There is no need for an additional set of independently modified HL7 interfaces. The fact is that SQL and other types of query languages have now been homogenized across the various vendor platforms. So a single SQL construct or single select statement, for example, can be leveraged against a myriad of target databases in a single statement without any need for translation, without any need for additional programmatic interfaces. And this is a relatively recent innovation in database technology, which has been very effectively utilized in B2B, business-to-business transaction systems, as well as the financial or banking sectors. So we know that this works in a real-world setting. The key of this whole model is the SSOT, or the single source of truth now, is shifted to the appropriate domain-specific stewards or stakeholders of that data. There is no longer the notion that any one department is any more important than the other, and this is, in fact, the federation. Federation of data sources, which then can be aggregated in real time. This particular model is based on using SQL servers. The consequences, then, to summarize, is that you can represent the data in one place in the overall enterprise, and that is in the respective departments that are the true and appropriate stakeholders of such data, and that you can have reduction in number of interfaces, because this, in fact, is the common bus. It is one interface shared by all these systems, which is the SQL query interface. And, of course, the transfer classes of information, since SQL can send back digital or so-called blobs or binary large objects, is now extended beyond simply the text domain of HL7. And finally, then, there's a reduction in support responsibilities at central IT at the hospital, because this is an aggregation tool. There's no need to support the database. There is no database here. I want to make a distinction, though, that this topology is meant for clinical support. There's absolutely nothing wrong with having a central repository for research where you're willing to accept the vagaries of a snapshot in time of your data perhaps drifting away from the reality. It's perhaps good enough for research, but if you're doing patient care, I think all of you would agree, having the most current available data is a highly desirable trait for a system. Again, just briefly, this model can be shifted to a web-based approach where either Java, Ruby on Rails, any number of constructs from a web browser can send an HTML-type query to multiple web servers, again, representing the individual members of the federation, with that data being sent back in HTML or XML format for just-in-time aggregation and display to the user. And again, all the benefits are the same as the Transact SQL approach in terms of shifting now the single source of truth to the individual members of the federation. And this can be carried out elegantly as a service-oriented architecture, which means that each one of these servers has a fixed and validated repertoire of queries to which it will respond in terms of XML or HTML. So that is the part that you standardize and validate, but you use the same approach across the entire institution. And this is a standard set of commands. So once you've established that, and perhaps these standards, it should be mentioned, are not really unique to an institution, but should be nationally and internationally mandated as part of our continuum, not unlike the IHE is already doing. So this is not at all in disparate notion with the integrated healthcare enterprise, I should mention. So what is beyond HL7? Well, at the top level is a notion of a so-called zero-knowledge message exchange. That is to say, there is no dependency anymore on having to spend a lot of time, programmatically and effort, customizing each and every HL7 interface. So, Dr. Ray Aller, who's in the audience, has a wonderful quote I use over and over, which is, you know, when you've seen one HL7 interface, you've seen one HL7 interface. And I thank you for that, Ray. So what's next after HL7? Actually, it turns out you can re-implement HL7 in an XML fashion. So the future may, in fact, or very likely will include HL7, just not in the way we're deploying it presently. Then there's true federated architectures that can be Transact, SQL, ODBC, which is a way of tying databases together. It's more of a Microsoft construct. So being vendor agnostic, I would just say that perhaps Transact SQL is a safer way to go. And then specifically this standard, how many of you have seen this? ISO 11179, by show of hands. High up. Okay, so a few of you, but not many. I would argue that for all of you interested in laboratory information exchange, this is very much worth reading up. I'll show you the URL you can retrieve it. This is the basis of formalizing the data elements for exchange, and not just on a local basis or institutional basis, but on a global basis. These are the so-called tags that define data elements. In other words, what is the tag that defines the patient first name, last name, middle name, and so forth? And then finally, one specific instantiation of XML in 11.179 is RDF, as we'll see shortly. So if we look at modern HL7 message exchange at the simplest level, and it's obviously a busy slide, I don't want you to worry too much about it, you have a sender, you have the construct of the data transfer medium, and the receiver. And then HL7 itself has multiple segments, OBX, OBRs. I don't have to go into detail other than to say that to make this work, there needs to be a pre-configured or pre-coordinated relationship between the sender and the receiver so that the sequence, as well as the content and the format, are specifically agreed upon a priori so that when this is sent in a particular sequence, this receiver is expecting this data element and then that data element and so forth. And if anything goes asunder in this sequence, instead of going this way, there's typically an error queue, I could have drawn that, where data will collect, which then needs to be manually processed or processed in a different way to say, well, why didn't it go across? Well, it deviated from the pre-arranged sequence. And this is really the crux of why HL7 is high maintenance. It is specifically specified to every construct, every data element, the sequence, the formatting, all of it. And so this type of interface is quite brittle and does break frequently, requires significant programming expertise to maintain. So we have dependence upon so-called pre-coordination of sender and receiver. And then finally, we see that quite commonly changes in workflow potentially change the required data elements that need to be sent across. Well, lo and behold, now that you've changed it here, where do you have to change it? Here. So that's your rework. And then if you have a downstream interface, so you've got your instrument to your LIS and then potentially LIS to HIS, you can see that these changes potentially have cascade dependencies that add to additional rework. Conversely, the zero-knowledge-based message exchange paradigm is different in that the data is self-defined, that you have a sender and you have a receiver. That hasn't changed. But what has changed is the reality that besides the actual data, patient name, laboratory reference range, laboratory result, laboratory test name, whatnot, is the specification of how that data is put together. And that means that all the data required to decompose or deconvolve this is self-contained in this information packet. And in theory, all the receiver has to do is read the specification layer as well as the data or payload layer of this construct and fully understand the sequence of information. And this is a so-called zero-knowledge paradigm because the receiver has zero knowledge to begin with other than knowing how to parse the message specification, the exchange specification. And that is, in fact, XML or extensible markup language, as we'll see. And this a priori knowledge reduction is really pivotal in reducing the work and rework because now you have a model in which any change here is implicit in the change in your specification layer and then does not necessarily imply a change at the receiver. There are a number of conservative informaticists, especially in the HL7 continuum, who have critiqued this model, saying if you have a not formally specified interchange, there is the risk of still misidentification. And I accept that critique. However, the reality is, as we gain operational knowledge with deploying this, just as has been done in the financial industries, and clearly, if bankers are comfortable with sending money for their bank accounts across with this model, that should give us some insight that when properly deployed, this should be safe and effective for healthcare information delivery as well. So finally then, the notion or need of using a message exchange specification ties into the ISO 11179, which is the way then of defining what the data elements look like and how they're supposed to be formatted, again, self-defined. So the tools that will empower the creation of such zero-knowledge interfaces are these so-called metadata construct tool sets, 179, XML, or extensible markup language, and then briefly, very briefly, we'll cover RDF, DAML, and OWL, and then Dublin Core and W3C compliance. So what is 11179? It's a worldwide standard that allows representation of data via markup language where the markup definitions are very consistently specified. And that is to say, once you come up with a data tag, this is the way we're going to say patient last name, like last name. That is then adjudicated on a worldwide basis through a standardized website so that all other sites standing to use this interface will query against the markup, the so-called schema definition, to validate that it's in the correct format. This supplement has multiple subparts. The main guiding principle of all these, however, is the methodology by which somebody identifies and then publishes data tags. This is not really even going to be at the level of the laboratorian. This will have to be at the level of multiple vendors working together in partnership. And since Lab Infotech Summit is a wonderful venue for the interdigitation of the vendor community and the user community, this is something that really needs to become in the forefront of discussion. Just as Mike Bisich mentioned earlier, that standards will be, in fact, the key enabling technology for solving these problems. One of the enablers of standards is itself another standard that used to build standards. And so even if you're not technically proficient with this, in your specification of using XML, you as the consumer should insist that XML standards are based on 11179. I think that's paramount. So XML itself, of course, is extensible markup language, and it's a way of using natural language text in a marked up fashion to create reproducible interfaces of information. So then tying this all together, what does XML look like when tied with ISO 11179? And this is an example of some of the perhaps rich data which we will be seeing in the future, molecular data, where we have ISO 11179 tags which have been adjudicated on a worldwide basis. We have words like chromosome. It can be human readable. It doesn't have to be fancy. Once the tags, however, are mapped, let's go to the next one. See some other examples that might be useful. Genomic location, we have variant reference, and so forth. Various unique terms that describe relatively complex and hierarchical types of data. This would not amend itself easily to a flat text report. XML is ideal for this. If XML is further leveraged by 11179, then the tags can be formalized on a worldwide basis, and as you receive XML data, you will be able to decode it and properly place it in your own local database because these conventions then would be globally agreed upon. That's the key enabling step. RDF is a variant of XML and very attractive in that it's a so-called resource description framework. It doesn't impose the same stringent requirements of inheritance and nesting of data. It's, as Jules Berman likes to say, it's a bag of terms. And that's very elegant in that from a vendor implementation perspective, this is very, very easy to implement and very, very effective for incorporation of the key data elements which constitute some type of data exchange. So the take-home point here is that RDF is one generation of technology beyond XML, which actually makes XML useful for examples like laboratory information system to hospital information system interchange. DAML, which is the DARPA Agent Markov language, again, supports complex web ontologies, again, the notion of inheritance, hand tied to arm tied to torso, and may be useful for complex and rich reporting requirements, such as I gave earlier in the molecular genomics type of report that had chromosomal data. This can show then the inheritance of introns and exons, introns to genes and then to chromosomes and so forth, as an example. And then finally, the web ontology language can complement RDF and DAML very elegantly, again providing constructs for interoperability of rich data, not just flat text, but types of data that have intrinsic inheritance. And again, my point in mentioning these standards is to raise your level of awareness of them so that in specifying future interfaces, you can have dialogue with your vendor, or vendors can have dialogue with customer needs about the use of potential tools for enhancing interoperability. And then finally, Dublin Core is a similar tool for such ontologies. And again, you can do a web search on Dublin Core and come up with the Dublin website showing the ontology tools that are available. And again, all these tools are in the public domain, freely available. They're public projects and not tied to intellectual property or royalties. So they're ideally suited for deployment in the setting of international healthcare interoperability. So putting this all together, Federation has the promise of enabling consolidation of optimal use of standards for pre-coordinated message exchange and reduced domain expertise at the central IT level, because now the distribution of data is carried out both on the content and also formatting level at the individual ancillary department. And this leads then for simplified application support and then less hours spent every year at the on interface. And finally, then the elimination of the need for customization whatsoever at the receiver site, because the specified message exchange is itself is self-contained. And any receiver then becomes a generic ISO 11179/XML receiver. You have, again, you've attained the notion of the interoperable telephone. You plug the telephone in the wall jack of your home, and it works. And finally, this is highly supportive of what Bruce mentioned in the last section about best-of-breed deployment, because now with these interoperable interfaces, if your core system lacks an area of functionality, it is less burdened to purchase or implement a separate standalone solution for one particular area of workflow or department or laboratory in a best-of-breed fashion. And then that allows then the deployment of core applications which are entirely focused at specialized workflows. And, of course, moving forward, as more and more workflow becomes highly specialized, the best-of-breed approach is, in fact, attractive. One unattractive aspect of best-of-breed is having more and more applications to support. But if the applications, in fact, are supported in a similar manner, a similar set of interfaces, that burden is at least somewhat reduced. And then finally, all this together allows the approaching of the vision of plug-and-play and interoperability in both intramural and extramural settings. And then getting back to example that I raised earlier of MD Anderson, their central hospital information system is a glass pane. It's not a repository. It provides a view into the just-in-time aggregated view of reports as provided by each federated department. So, example, when a query is made for a pathology report, not only does the pathology information system at MD Anderson generate the text, but it provides the layout and then displays that layout as intended on this glass panel or viewport provided by the central hospital information system. So you have shifted now effectively both content and formatting to the most empowered stakeholders and stewards of the data, as an example. And then this notion can be extended theoretically at some point in the future to regional healthcare networks, where now it's not the lab communicating with the hospital, but hospital sharing data amongst themselves bidirectionally. So just as a very brief standard, again, a plug for the Association of Pathology Informatics that is very concerned and interested with standards development in support of pathology and laboratory information systems, is the Laboratory Digital Imaging Project, and it's based on XML and RDF. It's W3C compliant, and it supports true knowledge functionality. It's based on an ISO 11179, And it has stakeholders both from the vendor community and from the user community. So this is a model implementation. It's an ongoing project. We're by no means finished, of showing how Federation can serve a real-world application. In this case, the exchange of images for clinical utility, of images of all type, gross imagery, microscopic histopathologic imagery, bitmaps, flow bitmaps from flow cytometric data, gels, whatnot, any type of graphical or high-dimensional data, for example, molecular expression data, that could be generated in the clinical laboratory continuum. And finally, I just wanted to mention that a joint partnership of the Association of Pathology Informatics with the Healthcare Information Society of Australasia is the first World Congress on Pathology Informatics in Brisbane, 16-17, and a training session on 18 in Australia of this year. And I encourage all of you to visit the website at wcpio7.org to learn more about this, what we hope will be a very exciting event. And thank you for your attention. I'll take questions at this point.